On Mastery, Part 10, Submission to a Master. Many people and organizations idealize a personal tutelage with a master. This status is considered a coveted honor, and one feels privileged to submit totally to the master's directions. Charles Leadbeater wrote, quote, "In occult terms, to hear is to obey," unquote. This ideal bears scrutiny, since submitting to a human being, even an adept magician or master, is not the same as submitting to God itself, to our conscience, to the one thing. In Vedic tradition, a spiritual aspirant, after thoroughly examining a spiritual teacher, Sadguru, submits to the guru for the duration of one's instruction. If the teacher is a genuine master of life, able to guide the aspirant toward liberation, this submission is ideal. The teacher uses authority over the student for the student's highest good and long-term spiritual goals. This Eastern tradition of full submission seems to be promoted in one form or another by many spiritual organizations. An attitude of veneration and subservience seems to exist in all organizations that claim to be associated with masters. Masters are described as having superhuman powers, and aspirants are naturally inspired with awe and curiosity. Subservience especially must be examined critically, for whenever one submits to another, it is easy to do much evil without evil intention. If an instruction or philosophy is truly given by an avatar or spiritual master, then submission is probably wise. Although some are playful, most are unfathomable, and all bear consequences of their actions and inaction. Otherwise, uncritical submission is highly inadvisable. Submission to a genuine spiritual master is one of the most beautiful relationships one can experience. It feels like total grace, even though one has worked hard and sacrificed everything for it. All one has given up seems like naught. It doesn't result in physical comfort, material wealth, status, or relief from worldly problems as many expect. It furthers one's spiritual growth. Material comfort can actually be counterproductive. All possessions require some of our time and energy. They need food, cleaning, maintenance, and protection. Yogis don't go to five-star hotels to do spiritual practice. They live in austere conditions, which helps them to focus single-mindedly on their goal. Although spiritual masters might heal or solve a problem, they aren't likely to make our investments a success or suddenly make our governors honest, humane, or diligent. Jesus did not free the Hebrews from domination by Rome. He directed their attention toward a heavenly kingdom and told them to give to Caesar what was Caesar's. Buddha did not eliminate sickness, old age, or death. He directed us to desire less and do what is right. Sufi masters don't coddle us, they throw us into the abyss. A true spiritual master is aware of a student's past and likely future, strengths and weaknesses, attachments and aversions. A true spiritual master arranges situations that help the student toward what the student needs most. A true spiritual master knows the way and guides the student toward ultimate truth, toward enlightenment, toward self-realization. To receive guidance from God or from a spiritual master, ask in the heart with sincerity, humility, and pure motive. Then, put goodwill into action by weeding out faults, purifying one's heart and mind, and doing good for others. Wait with discipline and forbearance, One's purpose and determination are usually tested. Often, lookalikes appear first. Only if nothing but the real thing will satisfy us does the real thing appear. Although our ultimate goal is one, there is an infinite variety of paths. Learning occurs in different ways in different orders. Each genuine master is intimately familiar with certain variations and is best suited to certain students. If one is making progress along a particular path with a genuine master, it is wise to follow the master's directions, as spiritual practices can be distracting or harmful if applied out of order or inappropriately. Milarepa became so discouraged by his master Marpa's harsh treatment that he lost hope. Marpa's wife felt so sorry for him that she forged a letter from her husband asking another teacher to give Milarepa the secret instruction. Milarepa went and received the instruction, but did not attain the expected result. Marpa was furious at all three of them. Marpa had planned to exhaust Milarepa's bad karma completely before granting him the instruction he desperately wanted. Milarepa thus had to endure years of harsh austerities before finally achieving liberation. If we think a master has accepted us or is communicating with us, it is good to avoid feeling important or superior. It is also crucial to test one's hearing and not assume that all one's ideas are the master's transmissions. Psychics and magicians can interfere in or hijack telepathic communication. One must refine one's senses and test whether ideas arise from our own conscious or subconscious, outside influences, or whether they are genuinely inspired by the master. Knowledge and techniques are not required to commune with our one source, to reach high states of consciousness, or to access truth. Vows are not required by our Creator, nor is obedience. Obedience to Thy will is smart, but not required. We are allowed to do good or bad, and when we experience the results, we decide to do good. Not because we are mindless robots or fearful animals obeying a commander, but because we are intelligent. Spiritual masters, in their wisdom, might require obedience from a student if warranted, but forceful domination is not typical of a master-student relationship. A true master honors the inner divinity in all, including students. And a student honors the superior attainment and the divinity in the master. A genuine spiritual master may not associate with any organization, may not require vows, and may teach subtly or silently. Individual counsel from a genuine spiritual master is of immeasurable value, to be cherished forever. A master may save a student from a calamity for which the student is eternally grateful. This does not mean the master is omnipotent or is able or willing to save everyone else from a calamity. Adepts in the hierarchy, either the real hierarchy or the man-made astral hierarchy, are viewed as perfect beings, omniscient and omnipotent. They are worshipped, held in awe. Any statement purporting to come from a master is treated as an irrefutable truth on its face. A suggestion is treated as a sacred order. This sense of unquestionable authority spreads to messengers and leaders of organizations that claim to be guided by them. Members of Earth's real administrative hierarchy do not claim to be infallible, but followers act as if they were. Organizations attract members by implying that the masters are omniscient and omnipotent, despite the fact that the organizations supposedly being infallibly guided are in a complete mess. Human beings have been trained to rely on an external savior or God rather than on our inner divine connection. When we look for an external savior, we fall at the feet of anyone who is more powerful, whom we cannot assess. People worship adepts and masters based on hearsay, without having met or experienced them. People surrender to someone whom they don't have the capacity to evaluate. Then they close their minds to any possibility that their God or master may be imperfect or false. It is appropriate to defer to superior knowledge and wisdom. At the same time, we do not always have the ability to discern whether such a person is truly spiritual or what the person's real motives are. The only true guide is our inner heart, our connection with our source, our conscience, our sincere desire for goodness. It is only through training this inner sense of ours by experience that we can navigate through the minefield of temptation, deceit, egotism, and ideologies that surround us. We would like to find security, a single source upon which we can depend. Any such source that is true refers us back to our own inner self. Our inner voice is not infallible, not because it's intrinsically defective, but because our mind, emotions, body, and desires produce considerable interference. Being human is a process of learning to discern and eventually realize truth. Spiritual mastery does not require dominance over anything other than oneself. Spiritual mastery does not require submission to a separate external authority. It requires a resonance with our source. Like Sage Utanka, for spiritual mastery, one must eventually rise above the rungs of all ladders, however useful they have been. At some point, they become a hindrance. Rungs and ladders are to be appreciated for their helpfulness when needed and discarded with gratitude when no longer required. The goal is always direct, personal resonance with our source. That makes mastery.